A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 451. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Alice in Wonderland. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are looking at the BBC's version of Alice in Wonderland from 1986. It's the Lewis Carroll classic, obviously. We have four episodes to look at. They're 30 minutes each or just under. And a nice colour, full colour version of Alice in Wonderland for us to talk about.
Yes, and we are returning to Wonderland, this fantasy world created by Lewis Carroll. We have looked at Jonathan Miller's adaptation from 1966, which was a very unusual and experimental take on things. And we also covered the 1973 adaptation of Through the Looking Glass, the second Alice book.
Indeed. And of course, Jonathan Miller's, we were in black and white. Here we're in BBC full colour. And we are probably from the Jonathan Miller version, we're perhaps into a more what we might regard as a faithful version, I think, Brian, but we will be talking about that as we go along.
It definitely meets the expectations of what we think about for Alice in Wonderland more so. So the setup for this, on a warm summer's day, Lewis Carroll and his friend Duckworth are on a river, rowing a boat on a river, and they have been set to entertain the three daughters of the Little family. And these young girls want to hear Carroll tell them the story of young Alice's adventures in a strange fantasy world, meeting various creatures and involving all sorts of linguistic puns and puzzles.
Very, in a way, familiar stuff for us if we're familiar with Lewis Carroll. And I should say, we talked about this being a BBC colour adaptation. The opening sequences, the framing sequences that happen at the start of every episode of Carroll and Duckworth and the young girls in the boat, that's in a sort of sepia tone, Brian, I think. And then as Alice shifts into Wonderland, we switch to colour. And in fact, we see young Alice and her sister sort of on the riverbank. And I think it turns to colour then, particularly when a very familiar white rabbit turns up.
Yes. The introduction of it sort of plays with that transition, I guess maybe even a bit of a Wizard of Oz influence there with it was sepia rather than black and white, but the transition to fantasy is the transition to color as well.
Yeah. And of course, Alice is going to follow that rabbit and she is going to follow down the rabbit hole into the fantastical territory of Wonderland itself. And the adventure is off and running.
Absolutely. And there are a variety of characters involved.
Indeed, Brian, so many characters that we're not going to go through them all, but let's pick out a few key people and creatures. We have, of course, Lewis Carroll himself, the storyteller, played by David Leonard, the teller of this tale, noted for his obvious fascination with linguistic jokes and all sorts of manipulations of the English language and keeping everybody entertained with, well, quite frankly, with his fantastic creations.
Yes, we see him in these sort of real world type sequences only at the beginning and end of each episode. It isn't something that they come back to too much, but it is part of it for sure. Alice, of course, is the central character, played by Kate Dorning, the young girl at the heart of the story, and always a big role for an actor in any Alice production, with singing and dancing, some green screen work, and an interesting performance we get there. And I'll note when we're talking about that this version of Alice in Wonderland definitely is a musical. There are definitely songs here.
And we mentioned, of course, that she's following the White Rabbit, played by Jonathan Cecil. A perpetually late rabbit, always in a rush, Alice follows into Wonderland, and of course the rabbit will later turn up in the story as an officer of the Queen of Hearts court, if you remember that part of the story. The actor Jonathan Cecil had actually had a part in the 1973 Through the Looking Glass adaptation that we previously talked about. Otherwise, he's best known, I think, for playing Bertie Wooster on television and then recording all the audiobooks of the P.G. Wodehouse stories as well. And here he is in full costume, full whiskers, full ears as the White Rabbit.
Yes, indeed. The Mad Hatter is played by Pip Donaghy, who played Griffin in the BBC adaptation of The Invisible Man, the Invisible Man of the title. We covered that some time ago now. So nice to see him showing up as the Mad Hatter.
Indeed. I was going to say we saw him in that, but we didn't see that much of him in that production in a way.
I guess that's true, yes.
If you have the Mad Hatter, you have to have the March Hare, here played by Neil Fitzwilliam. The tea time companion of the Mad Hatter, and again involved in all these word games and jokes that Carol has created for the characters in their singularly chaotic tea party setting. Again, it's a very familiar scene for us, but of course causes Alice great puzzlement.
The Dormouse is played by Elizabeth Sladen, who of course we know as Sarah Jane Smith from both classic Doctor Who and new Doctor Who and the Sarah Jane Adventures, and we miss her since her passing a number of years ago, and it's lovely to see her in this role here.
Indeed it is. Just fantastic to see her as a Dormouse, in fact. And we should say that this show does have a number of Doctor Who veterans from the classic era of Doctor Who in it. I noted that Michael Wisher is the voice of the Cheshire Cat, and Michael Wisher, of course, has played Davros. Roy Skelton, who did Dalek and other monster voices in classic Doctor Who, is the Mock Turtle. And an actress who we've mentioned a couple of times now, Brian, Isan Churchman, who, of course, is the voice of Alpha Centauri. She is in there somewhere as well in this production. So there's a number of classic Doctor Who veterans, which is really nice.
Yes, and the casting here in the whole is interesting, and I think it worked well.
So as we've mentioned, we have these four episodes, each with the sepia-toned framing sequence with Carol resuming his story for his companions in the boat, before we switch to the full colour of the fantasy world of Wonderland itself. Alice making her way rather slowly through all this world with there's some very familiar misadventures that we know from Alice in Wonderland, particularly the early stuff when there's a lot of changing of size, Brian, a lot of getting much smaller and much bigger and not necessarily having the right bit of kit or key or potion with you when that happens.
Yes, that was very much part of things in the way you might expect for Alice in Wonderland. And of course, the famous or infamous tea party, the Duchess with the pig-like baby, the Cheshire Cat, all of these show up. The King and Queen of Hearts are there. It's what we would expect for Alice in Wonderland, delivered with the poems from Lewis Carroll's book, and often those are set to music. There are lots of songs, so this is an original musical as well as a television adaptation, with quite a large cast and lots of animal costumes and some puppetry and green screen work, some interesting things done with silhouettes at points. So yeah, interesting adaptation here, I think.
Great stuff. Well, we should talk about our production notes for this particular BBC series, Brian.
Absolutely. And we're starting with another veteran of Doctor Who, Barry Letts, who lived from 1925 to 2009. He started with Doctor Who with the story The Enemy of the World, which featured Patrick Troughton. He was the director of that story.
He was indeed. And of course, he then goes on to become the series producer for Doctor Who from 1969 to 1974, a great period for Doctor Who. And he would later return as an executive producer in 1980. And during his time on the show, Brian, he has a reputation for introducing lots of contemporary real-world issues into 1970s, Doctor Who in particular. And of course, Barry Letts always, for the, you know, the rest of his career and the rest of his life, always a very sort of strong proponent and supporter of the show in all its incarnations. Even when he was no longer associated with it, he was always, I think, a great fan himself, I think, of his work and everybody else's work on Doctor Who.
Yes, absolutely. The team of Barry Letts and Terrence Dix as producer and script editor shaped early 1970s Doctor Who when John Pertwee was starring as the Third Doctor, and then everything that followed it was influenced. He's often credited for adding the moral aspects, the sort of increased moral authority and the moral allegory tales that you have a lot of in Doctor Who.
Indeed, and we know very well that if you saw the names Barry Letts and Terrence Dix somewhere on the story's credits, that you knew you were in safe hands with Doctor Who, and yet you were going to be watching something really good.
Yeah, absolutely. They were always very good, and they continued to work together into the 80s for the BBC with this classic strand, where they were working on adaptations of various books. It was often in this Sunday tea time slot, and that included the 1984 version of The Invisible Man that we've covered before and we mentioned earlier. It also included the Sherlock Holmes, The Hound of the Baskervilles adaptation that starred Tom Baker in 1982.
I wonder if that's available. We should look into that, actually. I'd love to talk about that as well.
It might be. I have seen that adaptation, and it's quite fun.
So I'll point out that this is a slight reversal of their earlier roles, because for Alice in Wonderland, this was produced by Terrence Dix and written and directed by Barry Letts. Terrence Dix, often a script editor. I think it's fair to say, Brian, that he didn't like being a producer quite so much, did he?
Yeah, he was quoted, I believe, as not liking that particular position. And he did it occasionally, but I believe he usually tried to be script editor or something else.
Right. Now, of course, we've already mentioned that several actors from, I suppose, their repertory company, the Doctor Who veterans, return to this production. They work with people, I guess, they know and work well with. There's a lot of costuming, there's a lot of extensive makeup and prosthetics to play the various animal characters that we know from Alice in Wonderland. Costumes designed by John Peacock, makeup designed by Joan Striblin. Nobody, I think, is going to be too surprised if I tell you, Brian, that both of those were also veterans from classic Doctor Who. And, of course, in a nice turn for this, they base their designs for the costumes and makeup on John Tenniel's famous illustrations for the 1865 novel of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Carroll.
Yes, they really were aiming for that faithfulness to the novel, both the text of the novel and also the original illustrations. The place where they varied from that was adding these little framing sequences. So Kate Dorning played both Alice Little in the framing sequences and also Alice herself in the bulk of the story. And she actually looked quite different in the two roles with the wigs and costumes involved. And the main character looks like the version from those original illustrations, with the pinafore dress and the striped stockings. The music for the series was composed and conducted by Stephen Deutsch, who had also done The Invisible Man, and it includes lots of original songs, so it really does make this into a musical, and we have a variety of effects that are used to create Wonderland, things being done with both sets and green screen effects, painted backdrops, there's puppetry involved, silhouette things are being used, and for the scale scale issue for Alice changing sizes, they use several different techniques.
And of course, in all of this, you've got the cast throwing themselves into it, Brian, singing, dancing, background gymnastics, all these various techniques going on to tell the story and deliver what you've said is quite a musical version of Alice in Wonderland for us.
Yes, and we did get, I think, quite enthusiastic performances in it. It was quite nice. That works really well for this work. Alice in Wonderland was broadcast on the BBC at tea time weekly starting on Sunday, January 5th, 1986.
Classic Sunday tea time slot for the BBC.
For sure.
So, availability time. In Region 2, it's slightly complicated for a change because the Region 2 DVD release has now been deleted. And as a result, I was watching the Region 1 version, which I managed to get hold of. It's from 2013. It's currently about £17. Just the four episodes and no extras. And obviously, you need to be able to play a Region 1 DVD. You need a Region 3 DVD player. So that slightly complicated things. It's not currently streaming over here. And of course, it's also not available on the Cinema Paradiso DVD rental site. We'll perhaps just mention that we are aware of this problem that DVDs are starting to disappear and that there's a lag between some of these shows, you know, being on physical media and then turning up on a streaming service. Not much more we can do about it other than note it at the moment, Brian.
Yes, and that's if they do show up on streaming. At the moment, some of these older productions, they don't always. In Region 1, there is a DVD release. It's the very one that you noted from 2013. It is currently available for about $9 US or $13 Canadian on the Amazon Marketplace. And as you say, that just has the episodes with no extras.
So that will do us for our first episode. Come back next time and join us for a couple of classic sequences from the familiar story of Alice in Wonderland. And we are going to consider it as a reference point in relation to the 1973 Sarah Sutton version of Alice Through the Looking Glass. And we might also mention that Jonathan Miller experimental film version from 1966, which we've also covered. We're going to do some comparisons a bit next time.
Yes, there are definitely some things to say about that. And we will also give our reviews, our own thoughts of this serial, and talk about our feelings about more faithful versus more experimental productions and aspects of productions of these classics.
Indeed.
Until then, you can find all of our previous episodes, more than 450 of them, on BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can join us there and join in on the conversations. And you can follow our updates on both Threads and Instagram. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
And we can also be found at The Voice of Geeks or on The Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com. Come along and find out what they're doing in terms of other podcasts, gaming, content, lots of geek stuff going on at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.